Hi there, and welcome to Insomnia Open Class, in which we answer questions from the community, from the Natto Nation. I'm so glad that you're here. And first of all, I'm thinking of if we have any announcements. As I shared on Monday, starting next week, we are going to, like, the price point of our Insomnia Immunity Program is going to go from $139 to $259. And it is just a great opportunity. If you've been thinking of joining, to join now, because, you know, once a member, you can stay at that price for as long as you would like to. Speaking of which, one thing that I'm realizing hasn't been quite clear, and I think I need to clarify, is that in our Insomnia Immunity Program, we have this curriculum, which is really what's called a success path. Like, it's a path from Oz, where you're really, like, bewildered and confused and you don't know what's going on, you're scared, you know, you're tired, to a place that we're called immunity, where, like, you're not bothered if that happens, and, you know, therefore it happens less and less. And there are actually 12, like, steps, 12 lessons, and there are different phases. So the first phase is from Oz to yo-yo, which, you know, I think it's a little bit of yo-yoing, but, you know, it's easier than Oz. And then Oz to what I call seedling, where we have, like, all the information we want, we have all the understanding, and we're kind of like a seed that's waiting to sprout. And it's a little bit mysterious and magical how that happens, how we go from kind of last step, if you will. But we have this these stages, and it's a 3-month, like, all the action steps are laid out over 3 months, so it's a 12-week curriculum. And if somebody wants to graduate before that, they can graduate whenever they want. Or if somebody wants to stay longer, they can too. So we have that flexibility, but we do have that, like, 12-week curriculum. And I think that hasn't been quite clear. So I'm going to clarify that, because it can help knowing that there is that structure built in, if you will. And with that said, we have some questions here from Maturo Mero, who's been with us for several of these Insomnia Open classes. So yeah, let's take a look at the questions from Maturo Mero here. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for the great books. You're in any time. I read the first two in 2 days, and now I understand a lot better. That's that's amazing. I'm sure that's Set It and Forget It, and This Is Natto. By the way, Tales of Courage, it's, you know, my personal favorite, and it's not been at all as popular as the other two books, but I think it's really nice. But anyway, what I generally notice is that I often feel a tight chest in the morning and early evening for no reason. My breathing becomes difficult. I think this automation or automatism is still normal, and is there a hidden thought or an old pattern behind it? Secondly, I sleep much better and mostly fell through, but somehow it doesn't feel like the old sleep before insomnia. It feels different. Can you say something about this? Definitely. I want to thank you for being here and thank you for asking questions. But this, feeling of a tight chest in the morning for no reason, and then breathing becomes difficult. Of course, as always, nothing here is medical advice. Anyone, if you're concerned about your health, talk to your doctor. But that said, I made a video, I think it was last week, on palpitations, where I talk about this, I think, really, really helpful teaching around context. And so what makes something we experience, some kind of physical experience we experience, scary or not, really often depends on context. So if we can use a tight chest or, like, shallow breathing as an example here to kind of, like, to use for our teaching. So if you imagine that you are watching the finals of the NBA, and you're rooting for, like, the Rockets, or, I don't know, some game here, some team, and, like, it's, you know, 2 minutes left on the clock, and your team is up or something like that. What do you think you're actually experiencing in that moment? You know, do you think you may have, like, palpitations? Is your heart beating fast? Are you sweaty? Is your chest feeling tight? Do you kind of breathe fast and shallow? Probably, because that's all part of, like, a fight and flight response. When we, you know, when our brain thinks we're in some kind of danger or something's about to happen, it puts, like, it creates, like, adrenaline and cortisol is flowing, and that makes all these things happen. You know, we breathe faster. We kind of, like, we're more tense. Our nervous system is kind of on alert, so we can feel tingling and things of that nature. But if that all happens when we're watching, like, an NBA finals, you know, somebody may ask you, like, what are you feeling right now? And you might be like, yeah, my heart is racing fast and my chest is feeling tight. But, you know, we don't think that's strange at all because it's in context. We realize that this is an intense moment. But when the same things happen without any context, like there's nothing going on around us, we're just sitting on a couch at home, then the same experiences can be really triggering and scary. And because they happen out of context, they seem to be happening for no particular reason. But in reality, there is actually an obvious reason. It's like an internal reason. We are scared of something, and that can be scared of something that is a perceived threat. We can be scared of being awake. We can be scared of feeling anxious. We can be scared of racing thoughts. And being scared of those things that cannot harm us actually can trigger the exact same response as watching like an NBA finals, you know? And we see that, aha, you know, this thing I'm feeling now is just another way of, you know, experiencing a little bit of hyperarousal, then automatically it's in context, right? Now it doesn't bother us and it happens less and less. So that really was the thing I thought about when I read this. And then a second thing here was like, Mathieu Ramirez says, I sleep much better and mostly felt through. It doesn't feel like the old sleep before insomnia. It feels different. Can you say something about this? Yes, most definitely. Oftentimes I get a question that is sort of a variation of this. Maybe we can say somebody asks me like, "Hey Daniel, like I'm not sleeping like before, and you know I slept better before, but I'm not sleeping like that now." And what I often say then is like, "Well, before you were not wondering how you slept before, you know." It's like, it can sound like just like a meaningless sentence, but really before we weren't trying to sleep like before, right? We weren't comparing with anything. We weren't trying to achieve anything. We weren't like, you know, monitoring or measuring anything. And then it just happened and we slept fine and we didn't feel anything in particular. And now when you've had like the struggle with sleep and it's been quite intense, but you have done kind of this inner work that Mathieu Ramirez has done by learning and educating themselves and things are getting easier. Well, that's super nice, but there can still be an element of like keeping an eye out, like still kind of comparing how refreshed you feel, how long you slept, how you kept. You can still be comparing that to before. And when we're comparing to before, there is an element of hyperarousal there. There's an element of a little bit of anxiety, curiosity, maybe things like that. And then sleep just doesn't feel the same, right? So oddly, just by kind of comparing how we sleep now to before, that in itself can explain why it doesn't feel the same. So Mathieu Ramirez, hope that made a lot of sense to you. And oh, this one just popped up automatically. We'll get to that on Laura, but I think there was somebody else before that. And it was Sylvia actually who says, "Hi Diane, thank you for helping me understand sleep and changing my behavior. I'm not there, but much better than 2 years ago. Tales of Courage, can wait to read that one." Can't wait to read that one. You're the best. Oh yeah, I really think it's a strong book. But before that, I want to say welcome. You're welcome, and I'm so glad that you know this has been valuable to you. And of course, that's thanks to you. You've done all the inner work. That's amazing. All right, I think there was no question there. Thanks so much for chiming in there, Sylvia. And Jake is here, longtime follower. Hi, Jake. Hope all is well. Yes, it is. I've been doing well for a while, but wondering if you have any insights about vivid dreams in relation to insomnia and unrefreshing sleep. Thanks again and best of luck. But yes, absolutely, Jake. There is a specific video. I believe it's actually 312. For some reason, I remember that. 312 on vivid dreams. Insomnia Insight 312. But I want to say this, that there are two reasons we often have nightmares and vivid dreams in the context of like insomnia. So insomnia in itself is I like to call it a surface manifestation of fear. It's a way that we can experience fear. When we are scared or when our fight or flight response is triggered, we can have like palpitations, you know, fast breathing, but we're also more vigilant and alert. And what we know about dreams is this, that if you know, there's no way to know if somebody is dreaming or not except to ask them, right? And so if you don't wake up, then you will never know if you had a dream or not, right? But if you have, let's say you have an early flight, You know, you're going to fly out at 4 a.m. and you have to be in the airport at 3 and like something like that. And you fall asleep at midnight. Well, you're so hyper aroused. You're so nervous about missing your flight that you're going to be waking up all the time. And oftentimes you have this hypersleep where you have, you know, you wake up a lot, and that in itself makes you remember all the dreams, but also the heightened state of alertness that, you know, creates a lot of dreams, creates a lot of content and nightmares and vivid dreams, etc. So hyperarousal, which is the reason we have insomnia, is also a common reason why we have vivid dreams. And also if we're like, you know, if we are, you know, first of all, if we are, you know, having very kind of fragmented sleep, that of course can lead to us not feeling refreshed. But also when we spend a lot of mental energy on like trying to figure it out and fix it and ponder it, that also drains a lot of energy. So I think those are many reasons why these things are all related. But as simplification always, I think, really helps, we can see that all these things can come from hyperarousal. And when we're not trying to fight that, get rid of it, but we're just, you know, understanding it, and we're not and we're allowing it to be, so to speak, it fades and everything fades along with it. Hope that helped, Jake. Lara's here with us and says, hi, Daniel. I'm really scared that I've slipped into my old insomnia. I'm sleeping twice a week again and literally feeling so awful. I can feel the fear of not sleeping looming, and I know this is why. Do you have any advice on how to help the fear? Things are getting really bad for me again. I feel like the golden days of my sleeping well and effortlessly are going further into the past. Yeah, so first of all, Lara, I'm of course sorry to hear this. But I will also share that I think it is very, very rare for the path of leaving insomnia to be a linear and fairly like easy path. For pretty much everyone, it is a bumpy path. And as difficult it is to be in these speed bumps, it is also when we have so much opportunity, because when we go through a speed bump with like being educated, we have like an educated path through a speed bump, and we see that, yeah, this is some residual fear coming up. This is my brain trying to warn me and keep me safe. And when we don't really respond much to it, it's not sustained, because the only thing that sustains fear is trying to, you know, make the fear go away. Unless there's an external reason for fear, right? But the internal fear, the ongoing kind of fear we have, is only sustained by us trying to make it go away. So when we're in a speed bump, which happens so naturally when the brain has been fear, there's always some, or this, until a certain time point, there is some residual fear that can pop up. It can be in a speed bump. But when we don't respond to it, it goes away. We start sleeping easily again. And then we have gone through the speed bump. And then what happens is like, we're not so afraid of it. We're not so afraid of a setback. We're not afraid of a relapse, because we see that that also doesn't stay unless we're trying to make it go away, right? And the less we're afraid of speed bumps, the less they happen, and the easier everything gets. So this, we have a whole playlist on speed bumps, which I think can be really, really helpful when you are in this situation, Lara. So definitely check that out, and hang in there and let us know how you do. All right. Now we have a question from Geek Princessin, who I think is first time I see a question from or a message from Geek Princessin, who says, "Dear Coach Daniel, you really saved me. After being diagnosed with cancer, healthy now, thanks God, I've been extremely health anxious. Your video about health inside insomnia was a game changer." Oh, that's amazing. So glad to hear this. So glad to hear this, and thanks for sharing this. It means a lot, and so glad that you're healthy now. So nice to hear this message. All right. Namra Shaw says, "Hi Daniel, quick question here is about hyperarousal and how to deal with it during the day. I'm confused about how to manage my sleep-related thoughts during daytime." Yeah, no, it's a very good and insightful question here. And I would like to say this, that I really, really think it's helpful to contextualize things that happen sort of inside of us as messages, meaning we have a brain, right? A brain that's a survival machine, always trying to keep us safe, always having, you know, creating stories and things like that. But a lot of what the brain does, we are never really aware of, you know? When something surfaces as awareness, when we become aware of something, that's basically like a message to us, right? I'm probably seeing and hearing things that never surface as awareness to me at this very moment, right? But if like a little sound like the door was opening, my brain would be like, make me aware of that, because like it's a message like, hey, the door's opening, maybe you want to check it out. Like, it's a little message to me, right? And really, pretty much all our experiences can be thought of as messages. If we feel something, that's a message to us. You know, we're made aware of that. Hear something, smell something, it's all kind of messages. And so are thoughts. Thoughts are messages. There's probably a lot of unconscious things happening in our brain that we're never aware of because they're not presented to us as a thought. And now in the context of having been scared of not sleeping, a lot of these messages are like, they come to us as worry thoughts. They're like, you know, what if I don't sleep tonight? What can I do? How's this gonna happen? Like, those are worry thoughts. And the intent behind them is just like, it's you know, the intent is to keep us safe. The intent is like, when we're facing something, we're supposed to be made aware of that so we can do something about it. Like if we're facing a threat, we can escape it or something like that. So the intent of them is just to kind of warn us, right? But here's the thing. If you imagine that your friend was about to sell all their assets and they told you, hey, I'm going to sell everything I own and I'm going to buy this crypto token, you know, this token, then you're probably going to be like, I don't think that's a good idea. Oh my goodness. And you're like telling your friend, like, maybe you shouldn't do that. You know, maybe this is going to happen, maybe that. But if your friend goes like, nah, whatever, it's going to be fine. I don't need to listen to you. What do? Well, you love your friend, right? So you're like, you call them, you kind of get in front of them, you nudge, you bother them until they listen to you because you feel you have such an important warning message. The point here, of course, is like the more your friend seems to not listen, the more you want to amplify the message, right? And the same thing happens inside of us. When during the day we get these kind of little warning messages from our brain, the more we try to like distract ourselves, no, I'm not going to do that, it's going to be fine, and we argue with ourselves and things like that. Basically, the more we don't want to hear the messages, the more the brain feels like, oh, you don't want to hear this? This is important. I'm going to make you hear it. I'm going to amplify it. It's going to come louder and stronger, right? So I think the way to meet this is really to be willing to hear the messages. Sometimes you can write them down just to sort of like show the brain that the message has been heard. Maybe we can just, you know, say the message in our brains, like, okay, my brain sent me the message, like, what if I don't sleep tonight? And we're like, yeah, that's, we don't know that. That could happen. That could not happen. And we just kind of show the brain that the message has been heard. And the brain realizes that, oh, wow, you're really listening. Like, Namra is a little listening. Namra's hearing all these messages and is willing to receive them. Then there's no longer a need for them. They've served their purpose. And the brain doesn't need to send them to us repeatedly. So yeah, Namra, I think that can be really helpful. Hope it made sense to you. And now let's look at what Octavio will share with us. Octavio says, hello, Daniel. Any insight on insomnia and loss of appetite? Yes, of course, as always. No medical advice here. Anyone concerned about your health, talk to your doctor. But it is very common to not have much appetite in the context of insomnia and losing weight. It's also common to have like, you know, nausea and things of that nature, which made me think right now in this moment of something that I've made to create more content on, which is like, you know, when you watch a movie and the character, like I'm just watching this Netflix show. We finished it. No, it was we watched a show. I don't remember what it was. I think it was Apple TV with my wife, called Severance. And there's one scene there, classic scene in many, many movies and TV series with the protagonist is part of something that is really, really upsetting. And he walks out to an alley and vomits. He throws up because it was just like, oh, it was so emotionally upsetting. And it just shows us that when something is emotionally upsetting to us, we can feel nauseous and vomit. Not strange. It's like it's a very real phenomenon. And another thing I'm thinking about, what do we do when we have some really, really an upsetting or like a strong message to somebody? We often go, I think you should sit down, right? Why do we tell people to sit down when we have something to tell them? Well, it's because if we hear something really, really upsetting, we can become dizzy. You know, we can become dizzy and we can fall down. So we should sit down, right? Also shows us kind of this mind-body link that, you know, how we think can really affect how we feel. And it's the same thing with our appetite. You know, our bodies are designed to, you know, not, we're not supposed to be eating when we're facing some type of threat, some type of like, when we're in some type of danger. That's not the time to eat. Maybe we can kind of force ourselves to eat even if we're in danger, but we're supposed to be on the lookout. We're supposed to kind of like do other things rather than eat. So it's very common that when we're scared, we eat less, our appetite goes down. And same thing when, you know, you often say like, I remember being a kid, people joked about like, you know, a teenager, how do you know that a teenager is in love? Well, they don't have any appetite. Again, like strong emotions often sort of suppress our appetite because they're part of like hyper arousal, a little bit of fight or flight, a little bit of excitement like that can often suppress our appetite. And oh, we had I have a guest, by the way, one of the Success Story guests, her name is Brenda. And if you look through the Talk Insomnia playlist, you'll find her there, Brenda. But she was so happy. I remember she was in our Insomnia Immunity program, and she shared in our graphic class one time, she was so happy because she ate a cheeseburger. She enjoyed a cheeseburger, and she hadn't done that for such a long time. And it was really like with education, with understanding, that hyperarousal went down, her appetite came back, and she was so happy. So yeah, that made me think about that. Hope that makes sense, Octavio. And let's see what Muhammad has to share with us today. Muhammad says, does having childhood trauma make you have scary dreams? And what best way to heal? CBT didn't work. Yeah, I would say this, that of course, our dream content is sometimes very random, right? Very, very random. But if we kind of consistently have dreams that are of a kind of unpleasant nature, oftentimes that does, this is not like any scientific evidence. This is just like my personal thoughts and opinion and experience that tells me that, you know, if we're very scared during the day, if there's something on our mind, that is often reflected in our dreams. You know, dream content to some degree can reflect kind of what we're going through during the day. And if we have been through a childhood trauma, I would say this, that traumatic event doesn't automatically make us have nightmares and scary dreams. But if we do think a lot about the trauma, if it's still very alive for us and we're still kind of scared as part of the trauma, if we still think a lot about this, and if the content of those thoughts are, you know, unpleasant and maybe scary and things like that, then I think very much it's not surprising that presents itself in our dreams as well. CBT didn't work. I think, you know, there is, to me, where CBT, like the magic of CBT to me is that it can teach us that we are not our thoughts. We can sort of examine our thoughts from the outside, look at our thoughts, challenge our thoughts, work with our thoughts. But at the end of the day, I believe that we don't have control over our thoughts. You know, sometimes in CBT it's presented as if you just do this, your thought will change. Do this to change your thought, you know. And I think it becomes kind of tricky when we get into kind of like fighting our thoughts, fighting ourselves, trying to control those things. So yeah, CBT can be a little tricky. And I think oftentimes like more of the ACT approach, I think generally can be more helpful for a lot of people. Again, no advice there, just some general thoughts. But that more towards acceptance, like I have those thoughts, I had that childhood trauma, I'm thinking a lot about it, it's upsetting to me, and I can allow all that to be, you know, I can allow myself to be upset, I can allow feelings to be, and I think often that leads us to where we want to do, where we want to be, rather than anything else. Shauna says, hi, Koshan, I found your channel yesterday, I'm signing up. I started trying to research what is wrong with me because I haven't felt like I've slept in years. I wake up and I'm convinced I haven't slept 1 minute. After watching a video, I think it is paradoxical insomnia. Do you have any tips on how to get rid of this? Well, Shane, I want to say that I'm so glad you're here. If you are joining one of our programs, then that's amazing. We look forward very much to working with you. But yeah, the paradoxical insomnia. Yeah, paradoxical insomnia basically describes when somebody is sleeping quite a lot more than they think they are sleeping. And to me, that's really kind of the definition of it. And this is actually like when you hear paradoxical insomnia, it can sound like, oh, I have something really strange and unusual, and it needs to be treated in a very, I need a specific thing to do, which can be tricky. I think it's much more helpful to see that, you know, all of us experience paradoxical insomnia, you know, at some, you know, sometime or another. Sometimes we fall asleep and somebody wakes up and we're like, I didn't sleep, but we did, right? That's kind of paradoxical insomnia, if you will. And where we have like that early morning flight and we feel like I didn't sleep at all. The time was just skipping ahead, but we did sleep. We just didn't really experience sleeping. So I often talk about this as, I call it time traveling. And I talk about time traveling as a part of what I call hypersleep, when there's a mix of, we are hyper aroused, but we are sleeping at the same time. So we can have a lot of these phenomenons like time skipping ahead. We're not sure if we slept at all. We feel like the whole night was just one superficial, kind of like in floating in and out of wakefulness type of experience. And now the question then becomes like, okay, how do I get rid of that? Well, then it leads us back to like what we talked about messaging before. Like if we think like, well, I have to fight this, I have to get rid of this, I have to stop this from happening, it's basically like we're fighting against ourselves. The messages, we don't want to hear a message, we don't want to experience something. And the more we try to push that back, the more amplified it becomes. But on the flip side, if we see that, aha, this is a common experience, it's nothing strange or unusual, then we can let it be and it fades out by itself. So really, really, I think that can really help. And yeah, check out our content on this as well. And so I think we'll conclude there. I think there was some really nice messages here from Lara. Says, thank you. You're saving my life. So amazing to hear that. Greek Princess says, greetings from Germany. So, so nice. All right. So yeah, we'll conclude there. As always, if you find everything you need here, Insomnia Open Class and our free content, that's amazing. If you would like to join our programs, we are so excited to see you on the inside and working with you there. So for anyone who wants to join, head over to our website and we'll conclude there. See you soon. Bye for now.